गिरिवर धारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदनन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरवन चारी जमुना तीरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदनन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनन्दन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना तीरवन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी
So these two verses, and I chose these two verses basically because I've heard over the years these two verses quoted most. I didn't check on the database where the Prabhupada chanted these most, but this is what I remember from devotees quoting this a lot. So otherwise there are 8 prayers and I thought it would be too long. So it's verse number 2 and 4.
Nana shasta vicharanaikanipanau sadharma samsthapaka nana sadharma samsthapaka lokanam hitakari त्रिभुवने मान्यौ शरण्याकर लोकानां हितकारिणौ त्रिभुवने मान्यौ शरण्याकर राधा कृष्ण पदारविन्द भजन नन्दे नमतालिका राधा कृष्ण पदारविन्द भजना नन्दे नमतालिका वन्दे रूप सनातन रघुजिगौ श्री जीव गोपालक गोपालक त्यक्त्वा तूर्णमशेषमण्डलपति श्रेणीं सदा तुच्छव Tyatva turnam shesha mandala pati shrenim tadatu chava bhutva dina ganesha kau karunaya kopina kanthashita bhutva dina ganesha kau karunaya kopina kanthashita gopi bhava rasamrita bhulahari kallola magna muhu gopi bhava rasamrita bhulahari kallola magna muhu vande rupa sanatana raghuji gau chi jiva gopalaka raghuji gau chi jiva gopalaka.
This is from Madhavendra Puri now. Sandhya vandana bhadramastu bhavato bhosnana tubhyam namo. Sandhya vandana bhadramastu bhavato bhosnana tubhyam namo. Bho deva pitarascha tarpana vidhau naham shama shamyata. Bho deva pitarascha tarpana vidhau naham shama shamyata. Yatra kvapi nishajya yadava kulo kamsasya kamsadrisha. Yatra kvapi nishajya smaram smaram agham harani tadalam manye kim anyena me. Smaram smaram manye anyena me.
So please read the English and please hear the Shat Goswam prayers, Prabhupada chanting so beautifully, really sweet. So, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So this morning we're reading from Canto 1, Chapter 6, verses number 5 to 10. Those are the assigned verses. So we can just read all together, all those five, and then I'll just say the English one after the other.
Narada Vacha Bhikshu bhi vipravasite vijnana deshri bhir mama vartamano vayasya dye tata etadekarasham.
Shri Narada said, the great sages who had imparted scientific knowledge of transcendence to me departed for other places, and I had to pass my life in this way. Purport. In his previous life, when Naraji was impregnated with spiritual knowledge by the grace of the great sages, there was a tangible change in his life. although he was only a boy of 5 years. That is an important symptom visible after initiation by the bona fide spiritual master. Actual association of devotees brings about a quick change in life for spiritual realization. How it so acted upon the previous life of Sri Narada Muni is described by and by in this chapter.
Ekatmaja me janani yoshin mudha chakinkari mayatmajayan nanyagatau chakre snehanubandhanam.
Translation: I was the only son of my mother, who was not only a simple woman but a maid servant as well. Since I was her only offspring, she had no other alternative for protection. She bound me with the tie of affection.
Sasvatantra nakalpashi yogakshemam mamechati ishasya hi vashe loko yoshadaru mai yatha.
She wanted to look after my maintenance properly, but because she was not independent, she was not able to do anything for me. The world is under the full control of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, everyone is like a wooden doll in the hands of a puppet master.
Aham chad brahma kule ushivams tad upekshaya digdesha kala vyuatpanno balaka panchahayanah.
When I was a mere child of 5 years, I lived in a Brahmana school. I was dependent on my mother's affection and had no experience of different lands.
Ekada nigratam geha duhantin nishigampati sarpo dakshat padaspurshta kirpanam kala chodita.
Once upon a time, my poor mother, when going out one night to milk a cow, was bitten on the leg by a serpent, influenced by supreme time. Purport: that is the way of dragging a sincere soul nearer to God. The poor boy was being looked after only by his affectionate mother, and yet the mother was taken from the world by the supreme will in order to put him completely at the mercy of the Lord.
Tada tad aham ishasya bhakta nam sham abhishataha anugraham manyamana pratishtham disham uttaram.
I took this as a special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benediction for his devotees. And so thinking, I started for the north. Purport: confidential devotees of the Lord see in every step a benedictory direction of the Lord. What is considered to be an odd or difficult moment in the mundane sense is accepted as special mercy of the Lord. Mundane prosperity is a kind of material fever, and by the grace of the Lord, the temperature of this material fever is gradually diminished, and spiritual health is obtained step by step. Mundane people misunderstand it.
Nama Om Shri Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swamite Namne Namaste Saraswati Deva Gauravani Pacharini Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashchasya Devatarini Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyebhya Patita Nam Pavani Bhuvyashni.
So this chapter, actually these few chapters, first couple chapters, are so important. We are hearing, at this stage, we are hearing a conversation between Narada Muni and the author here, the compiler of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavate Mahamuni Krite, Kim Va Parer, what is greater than the Bhagavatam. And here we are hearing about a discussion between the compiler, Vyasadeva, the author, and Narada Muni. We were hearing the other day, Narada Muni, Nagaraj Prabhu was talking about how you know, somebody can write a book on Narad Muni. Narad Muni is everywhere. He is everywhere. And so he is here, right here in the start, and he is the spiritual master of the compiler, the author of this Bhagavatam. He's the spiritual master of people all throughout the Bhagavatam. He's all over. And so I was thinking that it's important that we really carefully hear this narration, this story that's going on, this conversation that's going on between Vyasadeva and Narad Muni. Now, the other day, Nagaraj Prabhu actually did go through the previous chapter, and he kind of summarized. It was more the philosophical discussions that went between Vyasadeva and Narad Muni, what Narad Muni instructed him, and so forth, and Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries. Today, I like to go again myself with a different slant between the conversation between both of them, with chapter 5. It's more more focusing on the rasa, or the sweetness between Vyasadeva and Narad Muni, and focusing on Narad Muni, him as a preacher, and how he preaches. I mean, how is that he makes so many people devotees? What is his techniques? What is it about him that he wins people's heart, that people change their lives? I mean, we're a movement, Krishna conscious movement. Prabhupada's his order is to preach to outsiders, preach to devotees. Preaching is the essence. And so, who else to focus on but Narada Muni? And Narada Muni speaking, preaching to a devotee who is in distress. And this devotee is not an ordinary devotee. So how does he do it? What is it? And so, going back to chapter 4, initially, text 30, we hear that how Vyasadeva was feeling a little incomplete. And he could kind of sense that, he kind of felt that he hadn't pointed out devotional service of the Lord. But then right at that time, again, this is how Narad Muni is. He travels all over and he knows everything, and he knows Vyasadeva is feeling this way. And so he pops in right there. And Narada Muni, when he got there, it's interesting, despite that how Vyasadeva, he welcomed him with such reverence, so Gauravena, with so much veneration, that was equal to Brahmaji. So here Brahmaji is not only Narad Muni's father and spiritual master, and you know, but he's the creator. So he gave him with so much, he had so much respect for his spiritual master that he gave him such a welcome. And then after that, Narad Muni, when he was totally welcomed and taken care of, Narad Muni, he in a very described smile, apparently smiling, he says something to Vyasadeva, saying, and it almost seems like it's little sarcasm, or first of all, he addresses him as O son of Parashar. So he's addressing, it's important to see how Narad Muni, how he preaches, yeah? So he addresses him, O son of Parashar. In other words, it's kind of saying, you have such a great heritage, you're the son of Parashar Muni. It's kind of like, you know, you're a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. And when you address somebody like that, automatically the other person is thinking, oh, yes, I have to act properly. I'm a disciple of Srila Prabhupada. I have to present myself nicely and properly. So he says, O son of Parashar. And then he says, what did you write? I mean, it's kind of like, oh, you disciple of Srila Prabhupada. What did you write? You're such a learned person. You've studied all the shastras. You've studied Srila Prabhupada's books. And in the end, you write a mundane novel. I mean, how could you do that? And so that's kind of the mood Narada Muni seems like having, that, you know, you're a son of Parashar Muni, and you're writing such a thing that's just, you're saying that satisfying the body and mind is the object of self-realization. How could you do that? It's kind of like a little slap on his face. And then he's, after saying that, Narada Muni is saying, but, you know, you have studied so nicely. You have so much knowledge, and you have written that. And then, again, he gives a little sarcasm to him by saying, why should you be despondent with what you have written, thinking that you're undone? And he says, my dear Prabhu. So he's addressing him as Prabhu, master, that's his disciple. And then he says, why have you done something like that? But it's interesting, in response to that, Vyasadeva, he's saying, he said, yes, my dear Gurudev, what you're saying is true. I am not pacified. And then Vyasadeva glorifies Narada Muni. So you see the interaction between the disciple and the spiritual master. So Vyasadeva was very humble. Again, he's the author of this book that we're studying every day. And we want to see what kind of person he is. So he's humbled. And he's saying to the spiritual master, yes, you're right, Gurudev. I'm not pacified, I'm not happy. But Gurudev, you are very great. You are as good as all-pervasive super soul. And finding out deficiency in me, despite my being absorbed in transcendence and regulations and vows. I mean, you can see that I have done all that, but still, Gurudev, I am not, I don't know where I went wrong, but you can tell me. And then Narada is very straight with him. He just tells him straight as it is. He says, you have not broadcast the sublime, spotless glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then he really like puts him down by saying, what you have written is actually for crows. So he's very straightforward, but he's very strong in his language, and he's saying that what you have written is actually is for people who are interested in mundane stuff. It's a pilgrimage for crows. So this is not good. But then Narada Muni praises him. And he says, oh Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. And your fame is spotless. And so he praises him. And then again he says, what you have done is actually not good. Because what you have done is people are going to use your name for doing things that are prohibited. Because they are guided under your instruction, they'll accept such activities in the name of religion and will hardly care for prohibitions. So we see he goes back and forth. He tells him as it is, and he encourages him, he praises him, and then goes back and tells him as it is. And in the end he says, he appreciates him, and he said, your goodness has perfect vision. And then he gives his identity. In other words, you know who you are? You are present as the plenary portion of the Lord. So not only does he go back and forth like that, but then he tells him his identity, and he says, you're birthless. He says, although you are birthless, you appeared on this earth for the well-being of everybody. And so please describe the transcendental pastime of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he tells him, he assigns him, he gives him his direction, he gives him an order and tell him to do what he wants him to do as a spiritual master. But then Narada Muni, he's not just saying, this is what I'm telling you to do, this is what I think. He then continues to tell him that it's not me. He says, learned circles have positively concluded that. So he's giving pramana of others who say the same thing. We see that even in Bhagavad Krishna, in the Bhagavad Krishna, Krishna tends to do that. He gives his opinion, but he tells what the learned people, what they say and their opinion. And after Narada Muni says that learned people also say the same thing, then that's neat what I find, that he all of a sudden starts telling about his own life. But he's not telling about his own life, he's telling where did he get the knowledge. So that's, again, Narada Muni is being personal and being humble, expressing where I got this knowledge. In other words, I'm giving you knowledge, I'm telling you what to do, I'm telling you this is the place of pilgrimage for crows, but I also have a spiritual master. I have also learned that from others. So taking a humble position and letting and having a personal exchange with his disciple Vyasadeva. So then he describes that how he was the son of a maidservant. And he describes his service attitude. He says that he was engaged in the personal service of these great Bhaktivedantas. And he further describes his character that although he was a little boy, he was self-controlled and he was not naughty and he didn't get into sports, etc. After he talks about his character, then he glorifies his spiritual masters. And he says that how by taking the remnants of their food, he became purified, because these great souls, they imparted knowledge on me as for who I was with my nature and because of their nature. He says by their mercy, he got the knowledge. So naturally, when Narada Muni is talking about his own life and how he got the knowledge and how he's thankful to the Bhaktivedantas, it's a natural thing that one who is listening, the disciple or whoever you're speaking to, they're also thinking, oh yes, I would like to get that mercy. Or his spiritual master is thinking, oh, I would like to serve my spiritual master nicely and become qualified. And this is how Narada Muni inspires his listeners, and here in this case Vyasadeva. And then after he gives his own little life history from his previous life, he again tells Vyasadeva to please describe the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is from the last chapter. So in this chapter, we start with text 1, and Nagarjuna Prabhu gave a class on the 3-4 verses. But one couple of things I wanted to point out, that in text 1, Suta Goswami, he addresses Vyasadeva here as the son of Satyavati. Again, how they're addressing also has meaning. So the meaning I took out was, when Suta Goswami says, thus hearing all about Narada's birth. So we know Narada's birth, he was a maidservant. So then in the same verse, Suta Goswami says to Vyasadeva as son of Satyavati. And Satyavati was a daughter of a fisherwoman. So it's almost saying Narada was in his previous birth son of a maidservant and a low birth. And in one sense, Vyasadeva's birth from Satyavati was in one sense also a low birth because she was the daughter of a fisherwoman. And then after he tells that, Vyasadeva, after Narada Muni tells him to glorify, then Vyasadeva asks his spiritual master, Narada. He was inquisitive. He wants to know. Again, the personal relationship. Prabhupada describes in the third canto, he uses, says two words. That are one of my favorite verses. He describes that how, in the purport, he describes that this is the relationship between a servant and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, husband and wife. But I also take it as for spiritual master and disciple. So he uses two words, Gaurabhena and Vishrambhena. So we saw that how previously Vyasadeva very respectfully welcomed Narada Muni. And here we see Vishrambhena with very intimacy to ask the spiritual master, oh Gurudev, what did you do after the sages left? What was your life like? What did you do after initiation? He wants to know so that he can follow in his footsteps. And so Narada Muni had no hesitation in telling about his own life. And that's what we hear a little more about his life. He already started himself, but now after Vyasadeva is asking, he's telling something more intimate. He described a number in verse number 6. Verse number 5, he says, the great sages who had imparted scientific knowledge of transcendence to me departed for the other places, and I had to pass my life in this way. And then he says, okay, so in verse number 6, he's describing something about his mother. He says, the focus seems to be on his mother. First he says, I was the only son of my mother. So my mother had only me. And describes her as a simple woman, a maidservant, no other alternative for protection besides her son. And so she bound me with a tie of affection. So Narada Muni is talking about his mother and what she was like, what kind of woman she was, and what kind of feelings did she have for Narada. In verse number 7, she describes, she wanted to look after my maintenance properly. This is what she wanted to do, but she was not independent. Why she was not independent? Because everything is under the full control of the Supreme Lord. Everyone is like a wooden doll in the hands of a puppet master. This is how Narada Muni tells his disciple Vyasadeva. This is where she was at. She couldn't do anything. And in text number 8, the focus seems to be on himself. He says, I was a mere child of 5 years. So he's saying, I was just a little boy. I was only 5 years old. Can you imagine our Bhaktivedanta Academy? Think about a little child of 5 years. He says, I was just 5 years old. And then he further says, I was dependent on my mother's affection. So not only that she bound me with the tie of affection. Not that she wanted to only give me protection, but I too was dependent on my mother's affection. That was his state. Although he didn't care for sports, he didn't care, he was not a naughty boy, but he was dependent on his mother's affection. And then he further says, and he had no experience of different lands. In other words, he hadn't gone anywhere. He hadn't gone anywhere. This was his state. He was just in, basically, he just knew his mother's lap. This was his situation. This is what he's telling Vyasadeva. And then he tells in text number 9, once upon a time, my poor mother. Now the word poor, he says that for his mother, not for himself. He says, she, once upon a time, my poor mother, when going out one night to milk a cow, was bitten on the leg by a serpent influenced by time. And then Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, Prabhupada writes, the poor boy. So Prabhupada's heart is going towards Narada Muni. Although Narada Muni says poor mother, but Prabhupada writes the poor boy. The poor boy was only looked after by his affectionate mother. So then in the next verse, the last verse assigned today, Narada Muni says, how did he take it? Naturally, the disciples want to know, okay, what did you do, Gurudev? How did you see this? So he's saying how he took it. He took this as a special mercy of the Lord. Why did he take that as a special mercy of the Lord? Why? He says because the Lord always desires benediction for his devotees. So he knows that the Lord always wants good for his devotees. So there was nothing for him to lament. It was a special mercy of the Lord. So he was not lamenting. And he started further north. This is what we hear so far. The rest of it is for others to speak on. But in the very end of this chapter, again, Narada Muni, before he leaves, he tells Vyasadeva that you're freed from all sins, and so I have explained my birth and activities for self-realization. So he tells Narada Muni that I've told you all about myself, my birth and activities for self-realization, as you asked. So it wasn't some mundane thing, it was for self-realization. So here, this last verse about Prabhupada writes in the purport that confidential devotees of the Lord are in every step a benedictory direction of the Lord. What is considered to be an odd or difficult moment in the mundane sense is accepted as special mercy of the Lord. So this is something we all of us go through difficulties all the time. Krishna doesn't write fine print. He just says it very, very, very blatantly. This world is dukkhalayam and ashashvatam. So we see here how Narada Muni accepted this as the grace of the Lord. But this is not the only time Narada Muni has accepted the grace of the Lord. This is previous to he became Narada Muni, so to speak. But even as Narada Muni, we hear in the scriptures about Narada Muni going through difficulty. And one of the things that came, one I guess the main one that he goes through difficulty is when he goes and preaches to Daksha's son. You know, Daksha's, he had, I think, 10,000 sons or 100,000, I don't know, the Haryashvas. So he wanted sons because that was his service as a Prajapati, is to populate the universe. So he had these sons, the Haryashvas, and they went to perform austerity so they could get married and populate the universe. So Narad Muni, he goes and preaches to the Haryashvas. And basically he, by preaching to them, and the way he preaches is something that you need to go and read. He preaches in a very indirect way this time, like in, I forget what it is called, but giving analogies. And so not so much direct, but giving analogy for them to understand that they should just take on to sannyas, you know, and not populate. But the Haryashvas were able to understand what Narad Muni was saying. And so they accepted him as a spiritual master, and they circumambulate him and forget about populating the world. And what I found interesting this whole thing is that Narad Muni, after he did that, he himself went to Daksha and told him the news. And I thought that was pretty far out. And so I guess one way to see, I was thinking, is that, okay, Narad Muni was thinking, okay, I know Daksha is going to get mad at me, so let me just go and tell him myself about what I did. And anyway, so he told Daksha, and Daksha was really upset, but he didn't say too much to Narad Muni. So then, as we all know, Daksha had another set of sons, the Salalashvas, and so they also went to do the same thing. So this time what Narad Muni does, again, we're concentrating on Narad Muni, how he deals with things, how he preaches, and how he deals with difficult moments. In this situation, we see how he also deals with it, another difficult moment. So when he preaches to these sons, the Savalashvas, he kind of tells them, you know, you are all very affectionate to your elder brothers, the Haryashvas, therefore you should follow their path. So that's how he entices them to give up this path of grihastha life and just go and take sannyas. And sure enough, they do the same thing. Now, this time, Narad Muni does not go and tell Daksha. I guess Narad Muni knew he was going to be in real trouble, so he decided not to go. It seems, my speculation is. So Daksha heard it. He was really upset. And then finally, he met Narada. And he was really, really upset with Narad Muni. And describes that his lips began trembling in anger, and he spoke really, like, offensively. Now, a quick thing. I was thinking, you know, we tend to think, oh, Daksha, you know, he's so materialistic. But when we really think about him in our terms, so to speak, in our, you know, what we are, who we are, what we're doing, and put it in those terms. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, that was his service to populate. That's his service. So he was doing what he was going to do. But you can imagine if we had sons who we put them through school and they performed austerities and they went to law school at Harvard and graduated, and when they graduated, or while they were graduating, or whatever, the devotees from, you know, Boston come there and tell them that you should join the preach to them, and they joined the ashram there. Okay, they did it to one son, and then the other son or daughter, whoever does the same thing. You can imagine, you're going to be quite upset with the devotees there, saying, you know, I put so much money and effort and everything, and I got suitable girls to get married to my sons, or suitable husbands for my daughter, and now they've given everything, and they're going to be living in the rest of their life in the ashram. That could be very, not only that our parents went through, but I think if we really truly think in our heart, if our kids did the same thing and actually just stayed in the ashram, no matter how kind of good devotees we are, we might not be maybe too happy about that. At least this is where I'm at. Anyway, so Daksha was really upset with Narada Muni. But the point here is that Daksha was so offensive, so rude. You have to read that whole pastime there. I mean, Daksha was, he says, you know, you dress like a saintly person, but you're not actually a saint. You know, I am in grihastha life, but I'm actually a saintly person. And that's what Daksha said. I'm actually a saintly person. And then he said, you have committed violence against all the living entities, and yet you claim to be an associate of Lord Vishnu. You're actually defaming the spiritual personality of Godhead. This is what you're doing. He said, all the devotees of the Lord, but you, only you, only you are not kind conditioned souls. Are you not ashamed of posing yourself as a devotee while performing these abominable actions? So this is what Narada Muni had to hear. And in the end, we know Daksha curses him. He says, you may travel all over the universe, but I curse you. You have no residence, for you to have no residence anywhere. Now, Narada Muni, Shukadeva Goswami says that Narada Muni could have cursed Prajapati Daksha in return. But because he was tolerant and a merciful sadhu, he took no action. But instead, what did he say? Tad bardham. Yes, what you have said is good, and I accept the curse. So, this is Narada Muni. So much so much criticism going on here. So much criticism by Daksha, but he did not retaliate. But he accepted the curse, although he could curse him back. But he didn't. So this is what Prabhupada is writing here in the purport, that confidential devotees of the Lord see in every step something good. Because why? Because they see that Krishna is very kind to his devotees. Everything is for our good. Why go cursing and counter-cursing? No need for cursing and counter-cursing. He accepted the curse and fine, no problem. I don't have a resident, I don't have it. He took that as a blessing. He took that as a blessing when his mother passed away in his previous life. So this is something that we can learn from this great devotee, our transcendental spaceman, our great preacher, spiritual master of so many, is how to preach and how to take reverses in our life that see them as benediction. I'd like to end here. Thank you very much. If anybody has any questions or comments, please do so.
Hare Krishna, if you have any question, comments, reflection, You can type it on the chat room, or you can text me at 352-221-0041. It's not a question, but from a different angle to look at it, mm-hmm. that in general, what Daksha expressed, it is there in everyone's life. They think about Hare Krishna philosophy something like this, that it is not necessary, we have to do our duty. So I remember that verse in Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada quote from 11th canto, Devarshi Bhutatto Ninam Pittinam. These three deaths. It's true, if somebody is not completely dedicated to Krishna consciousness, they should think of paying those debts. They cannot escape from it. So from that angle, Daksha is correct. I'm not saying he's right what he did with Narad Muni, but his point was very true, that we have a debt to the demigod, we have a debt to the rishis, and we have a debt to the forefathers. Mm-hmm. And everybody has to pay. And then the process was given by Daksha. He said that. Devarshi, he says, you produce children, so forefathers are being pacified or something. Mm-hmm. And you offer oblation or jagna, so the demigod are pacified. And then you do some austerity, like stay brahmachari or something, and the sages, they are kind of pacified. But this is, I think everybody should do it. I am supporting in that sense. That Dr. Prabhupada made that point one lecture. He said, what he said is correct, but it is not applicable to Krishna consciousness philosophy, because that function is transcendental. But in general, even the Hindus, they should do this. If they are not ready to join completely to be dedicated Krishna, then they should. They should, otherwise they are going to suffer anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying is correct. In the Bhagavad Gita, maybe you can help quote the verse, but describes that one should not agitate the mind of those, I think it's in second chapter. In other words, you should perform your duties and not agitate those who are not in the path or something like that, yeah? Yeah, it's very important that these things to be done. Sometimes, certainly, the question comes even for ourselves as devotees, because, I mean, at least speaking for myself, not fully surrendered, in the process of surrendering. And so in one sense, you kind of feel like, yes, we have those obligations as practicing Vaishnavas, but yet they're not important. So it's sometimes in the mind there's the question is like, I remember one time one Maharaj, his name was Mangal Maharaj, and Varuna was driving him or something, and he was making the point to Varuna, to my brother, that, you know, you should be taking care of your parents and you should be doing all that, you know. And I remember thinking like, oh, where is he coming from? You know, we are devotees and we don't have to do all this, and you know. But I think as we have become mature, and even as, I think it's good that we became fanatics, so to speak. But because of through experience, going through the experience has actually made us mature and able to take care of those duties in a Krishna conscious manner rather than in the material sense. And so we have seen so many devotees taking care of their parents and giving them Krishna consciousness, you know, even taking care of them physically and like that, you know. And because naturally when we practice Krishna consciousness, our heart softens and we become more compassionate. And as we become more compassionate, our approach to all these things, whether to the our debt to the demigods or to the forefathers or to the sages, we have a Krishna conscious understanding of it, rather than in an immature way push it away and say, oh, we don't have anything to do with it. I mean, I remember when I became a devotee, there was some new family that came to the temple in Philadelphia, and I asked them, you know, so who do you worship? Lord Shiva. Oh, Lord Shiva, you shouldn't be worshiping Lord Shiva, and Krishna is the Supreme Person. You know, I mean, did my whole spiel to them, you know. And I don't think so those people ever came. But would I do that now? No. No, it's a different understanding. So even these understanding are debts. I think we have a more Krishna conscious understanding of things, and we know how to pay it off, you know. So.
Yet. Maybe you can read the translation of the song that you sang, that the Madhavendra Puri is.
Oh, yes.
Because this gives you some idea also.
Yes.
And I was thinking, like, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself did funeral for his mother, for his father. He went to Gaya, he did Pindadan, you know. Of course, he met his guru, he established this. But in certain cases, I'm not trying to point out,
yeah.
When somebody's relative died, they asked me, I said, what are you going to do? I thought, oh, as a devotee, we don't do anything. I said, no, you do. You do. You offer the prasadam, and you cook for the deity, and you invite the devotees, senior devotees, and feed them. And you take the remnants, you take it outside and offer to your relative. It's not like we don't do anything.
Yeah,
we should be compassionate.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is the translation of Madhavendra Puri's prayer. Oh, my prayers 3 times a day, all glories to you. Oh, bathing, I offer my obeisances unto you. O demigods, O forefathers, please excuse me for my inability to offer you my respects. Now, wherever I sit, I can remember the great descendant of the Yadu dynasty, Krishna, the enemy of Kansa, and thereby I can free myself from all sinful bondage. I think this is sufficient for me. So yeah, if we can remember, if we can remember all the time, we are free. But yet, whatever time we can, it's good. And as I said, our heart. Is Mother Mati saying we should worship demigods so we can help them become better devotees? Well, I know Sri Didimuni Prabhu, if you become a better devotee, which you already are, yes, why not? This thing went off. How do you turn it on? Like this? Oh, okay. Yes, I know you can help Sri Didimuni. You can help the demigods. But we should help, why not? Ramya Prabhu. I love Mataji's class. How can we follow Nara's example when he lived thousands of years ago at a very different time? We can't go wander the forest. Okay, Ramya Prabhu, that's true. We can't go wander the forest. But, Nara's example is thousands of years ago. But we can see his mood. I guess that's what I was expressing, his mood. The details may be different, but we can see his mood. What was his mood? His mood was to accept whatever happens in our lives as Krishna's arrangement and serve the Supreme Law. So Srila Prabhupada has given us what to do. Srila Prabhupada has given us what to do. So we follow in his footsteps and do what he has asked us to do. Sridhar Muni says, that's a joke, but curious to find out what she would say. These jokes don't work as text messages. Yeah, we can't wait, Sridhar Muni Prabhu, for you to be personally present here and give us those comments and have those interactions. We definitely miss that giving class here. But hopefully that will happen soon. Hare Krishna, Sridhar Prabhu.
Mother Chitra says, great class, thank you, Madhumati.
Thank you.
And another devotee, now we take the rituals and add our spiritual heritage of bhakti. Then it all becomes spirit ritual.
Thank you. Thank you for the nice
from Sarga Kesten.
From who?
Sarga
Kesten. Swarga or Swarga Devi. Yes, thank you, Swarga. That's a very nice comment. Yes. That's what it is. We just add in bhakti. We don't give up anything. We add in bhakti. And yes, we see that. We see that in devotees' lives over the years, our understanding, hearing the same Bhagavatam, being with the same devotees, and hearing from each other and hearing from Srila Prabhupada, we have, like Prabhupada said, you know, you rub against each other and we become more smooth. So I think we have rubbed against each other, and hopefully we can rub ourselves against each other more as this social distancing goes away. God, I miss giving those hugs to the Vaishnavas. But yes, this we can actually, all we have to do is introduce the bhakti, and these rituals will be all bhakti. So thank you very much, all the devotees of the Lord. Thank you for your kind association, and Hare Krishna, all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.